DevOps. Auf die Ohren und ins Hirn. Ein Podcast rund um DevOps. Von Alex Lichtenberger und Dirk Söllner.
Hello and welcome to the podcast DevOps auf die Ohren und in das Hirn, which translates into something like DevOps through your ears into your brain. My name is Alex Lichtenberger and together with Dirk Söllner, I run this podcast. As you can hear, this is now our first podcast in English. The reason for this, we have today a special guest, Rob England, also known as the IT Skeptic. Hi, Rob.
Hi there. Glad to be aboard.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks you could join. So it's not only special that it is in English, but in fact, Rob is also located literally on the other end of the globe. So now from speaking from a European perspective in New Zealand. So this also means that the time we record this session, it's 10 o'clock in the evening in Germany or Switzerland, and your time it's now
8 a.m. in New
8
Zealand.
8 a.m., yeah, incredible.
8 a.m. tomorrow, so I can tell you that the weather is very nice tomorrow.
Good, yeah. I hope it gets to us. As this is now in English, and I guess we also will have some new speakers, so it's worth also shortly explaining what this podcast is about. So our goal is to do interesting interviews and expert talks around DevOps, and also as this is a podcast, so I guess this is also very interesting for people who actually like the medium of a podcast, so be it in the train, bus, car or on the flight. Today's topic is project management is the worst thing that ever happened to IT. Very interesting thesis, I think. And before we actually go into that topic and topic of DevOps, maybe Rob, you can shortly introduce yourselves about you as a person and what you do professionally. Yeah, Rob?
Okay, so I've been consulting in Wellington, New Zealand for 12 years now. Before that, I was in vendor land as a pre-sales guy doing solutioning. And so I've been consulting. I come from an ITIL and service management and operational background, though if you dig, if you dig deep enough, then originally I was a code developer. And in that time consulting, I've moved through service management and governance and strategy. And I also set up a small blog, which back in the days, 12 years ago, when that was a novel thing to do. And it got a bit of a following around the world, which was fun. And it networked me into a bunch of people so that along the road of Agile and then later DevOps, the blog was taking a very skeptical view of these things and throwing a lot of rocks. And some of the leading thinkers in the DevOps space worked on me over a period of years and slowly broke down all my objections and turned me into a bit of a fanboy, a bit of an evangelist for DevOps. So I've been trying to talk to people in Wellington about DevOps for quite a long time. And in recent years, it has exploded. And now I work 100% in DevOps consulting. It's all I do. And I work now with my partner in life and work, Dr. Cherry Vu, and we call ourselves Teal Unicorn, which is a bit of a trendy brand, but we like riding on the wave of fad energy. So Teal Unicorn, I'm actually quite proud of that one. I think it's quite a good brand for a consulting organization. And so that's what we do. We consult here in Wellington. We design and build games. We deliver games such as the Phoenix Project game from GamingWorks. We go to conferences. We speak. We spoke at the DevOps Enterprise Summit in London last week. And just immerse in all things DevOps. It's wonderful.
Hello, Rob. So thanks. And it's nice to have you here in our podcast. So like we do to all our guests, what would you say? How would you define DevOps?
DevOps is whatever you say it is, man. You know, it has no formal definition. So it's wonderful that you ask that question of everybody. And I take the big picture definition. So, you know, some people would say it's somebody in a server room automating a Linux server. And some people would say it's continuous integration and continuous delivery and continuous testing and the flow from development to deployment, and particularly the automation of that. But I take the even bigger view of CALMS, culture, automation, lean, measurement, and sharing, and applying those principles to all the value streams in IT, not just the require to deploy value stream, but anywhere where we can move to new ways of working, which is my preferred phrase for describing it. So for someone like me, the term DevOps is actually more baggage than help these days, because it's very technical and it focuses on dev and ops, and it doesn't really embrace all the principles of new ways of working which have emerged in this space.
Yes, okay. So like you, like Alex, and like me, we all came from IT service management. So what do you think? What's the correlation between IT service management and DevOps?
Several decades ago. I think that ITSM is just part of the thinking, and I'm a big fan of Gene Kim's approach to that ITSM is an integral part of all of this, but ITSM needs to move its thinking forward just like every other aspect of IT needs to. So that whole crossover and impact on ITSM is a particular area of interest and study for me, and that's what we presented on last week. It's we went kind of tribal for a while, and the Agile/DevOps community and the ITSM community kind of got it at opposite ends of the paddock and threw stones at each other. And it hasn't necessarily been a constructive relationship, but we're seeing lately, I think, around the world that the two groups are now really starting to think together and get together and cross over ideas. And DevOps and Agile are bringing new thinking into ITIL, hence ITIL practitioner, or as I prefer to call it, ITIL 3.5, and hence the work on ITIL 4, and hence Verism as a framework, and hence finally some influence from thinkers like Richard Cook and Sydney Decker and some of the new ways of thinking about error and resilience, and particularly thinking around complex systems. So all these ideas are spilling into the ITSM space at last. And so I think that's the relationship, is that there has been a tribalism, but we're coming together, and I've always advocated that we just need to bring ITSM along on the journey.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, that future versions of ITIL and also Verizon will bring in these ideas. And coming back to your definition also of DevOps, as Dirk said, we ask that question every interview guest, and each time it's a little bit different. But from my point of view, I liked that you're actually holistic view. So looking at the different aspects which are needed, and especially the people aspect, so new way of working.
In fact, now I'm trying to expand to train myself to say new ways of working and managing. Mm-hmm. Because one of the strongly emergent themes in recent years has been that for an organization to change, the leaders need to change.
Right.
And so all the talk around servant leadership and transformational leader, and realizing that often Agile and DevOps fail because the management think it's something you do to fix their people, and that they don't need to change the way they manage at all. Mm-hmm. We really need to break that.
Yeah, which nicely brings us to the actual topic. So you talked about management. So also now talking about managing projects. And one of your, I mean, the reason how we got to that topic is also, I mean, some of our listeners maybe know the blogs of Rob England, always with very interesting titles. I personally like also the one that was titled like How DevOps Messes With Your Head. But recently you wrote a couple of blogs like, I have to look that up, but it was like 10 Agile Principles That Screw Up Conventional Project Management, or the latest one was The Oxymoron of Agile Project Management, or an older one, Project Management Was the Worst Thing That Ever Happened to IT. So I think they all go into the same direction. So Rob, maybe you can, just as an intro, you can also shortly explain. So we did now for decades projects. So now you say that's the worst thing ever happened to IT. Can you please explain?
So the way I see it, somewhere back in the 80s and 90s, as the cost of IT escalated in lots of organizations, generally for very good reasons, because IT was becoming more and more mission critical and more complex, and so the costs were rising. And organizations governed IT like a black art. They really didn't understand how it works in the same way that they understand how finance works or, you know, people management works. So it was just a black art. They didn't understand it. So they went, oh my God, we need to get some control over this. Let's black box it. Let's define the inputs and measure the outputs. And so let's put a project and program management framework over it so that we can see that we're getting what we thought we were getting with our money. And IT, being typical IT, took an intensive engineering approach to project management and adopted, you know, civil engineering style project management, and imposed these strict waterfall constructs on us. And as a result, applied a paradigm that is completely inappropriate in a software world. And the reason I say it's inappropriate is because of our understanding now. So at the time, you know, we didn't know everything that we know now, but we understand now that what we build are not simple systems, they're complex systems. That you can define a bridge down to the last rivet and girder and then build the bridge because it's near to a simple system, whereas a software system is nothing of the sort. It's a complex system, mm-hmm. which means that we have no idea when we start the journey what it is we're actually going to build. And yet project management perpetuates this myth of you know, define once, execute perfectly, design what you're going to do and then do it, and have, you know, defined inputs and expected outputs.
Great. So let's go a little bit more into detail. And just a few days ago, I read your blog article about dysfunctions of project management. And I think it's a good point to use it for a podcast to talk about some of your mentioned points over there. So what do you think, how much responsibility is within DevOps?
Yes, I put those 20 dysfunctions out yesterday, and it seems to have stirred up a bit of a hornet's nest. So I'll be looking forward to putting this podcast link out as a response to some of that. But there's some really major dysfunctions that project management thinking drives in IT. And one, I'm a people person, so I'm with you. Anything that affects people is one of my primary concerns. And so, you know, the basic model for project management is we bring the team to the work. So we define a piece of work, and then we draw together people to create a team to execute that piece of work. And then when the work is completed, we disband the team, which is flies in the face of everything we know about human behavior, that any team has to go through the old forming, storming, norming, performing cycle. They need to take time to coalesce as a group. And they're only just getting into the perform. Once you get into the performing phase, you can then start optimizing how you work. So they get into a performing phase and they start optimizing how they work. And the next thing you know, the project's over and the team's disbanded and they all sent off in different directions. So it's a highly dysfunctional way of managing people. Whereas, you know, the product management thinking is that you have a standing product team that is as stable for as long as possible and has the time to get into a performing and then continuously optimizing mode. And instead of bringing the team to the work, we bring the work to the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I fully agree. And there are like now two aspects you looked at. One is the problem with the phased approach, and I'm most of the time working as an agile coach, and I agree that, you know, in the beginning, if you don't know exactly what the requirements are, there's a complex system, you have to make the experience first, and anyway the team is in a storming phase that you cannot be sure what your performance is, so you rather go an agile approach. And the other thing is also what I really like and what I see as well is, so less now talking about project, what's more about products. What I would be interested in, because if how do you see, because you say, okay, that's actually the traditional or waterfall project management doesn't make sense anymore, but don't we still have situations in IT where it still would make sense? So where we exactly want to go and requirements are clear from the beginning. So isn't it rather that, let's say, a typical consultant answer, like, it depends. So which approach we choose, you know what I mean?
I don't feel that way. I know a lot of people do, for two reasons. One is I challenge the assertion that we know our requirements in any software situation. Mm-hmm. So we are always building a complex system. If nothing else, every system we build has people in it. And as soon as you have people in a system, it's by definition complex. People are never simple, linear, and predictable. So, and all our systems have people in them. We have to stop pretending that we build things that have no people in them. So I challenge the assertion that we're ever in a situation where we're about to build a simple linear system and we have a clear understanding of the requirements for that simple linear system. I just don't think we're in that situation. So I think that's one challenge to it. And then the other challenge is the whole bimodal thing. You know, even if there was a situation where project management was a usable approach, I see no reason why we should have two ways of working in an organization. It's equally amenable to doing it in an agile way. So, you know, let's adopt a single way of working for the organization that works in all situations instead of adopting a new way of working for the situations where the old way of working doesn't work, and then still dust off the old way of working and drag it out occasionally when it does fit.
Mm-hmm. Then as a consequence, this would mean that, so you say bimodal is not really an option. So what would be the consequence for the companies that there is only one model of working?
The consequence of only one model? Mm-hmm. So to flip that, I think, you know, the consequences of bimodal are toxic. Mm-hmm. And it's possibly the worst idea that Gartner have ever had, but there's a lot of competition for that title, right, from Gartner.
I mean, I agree with you. I also play a little bit the devil's advocate. So, and Gartner was also were the ones who came up with the successor of the bimodal, which was the paste layered application, You're right, multi-speed IT, isn't it?
And I'm an advocate of multi-speed IT, uh-huh, only in the sense that whatever one way of working we come up with, it needs to embrace multiple cadences. So, you know, the paste layering model and the application of multiple cadences, I'm fine, I'm down with. But that we can still do all of those different cadences with the same way of working is the point. Mm-hmm. And you know, Gartner have softened their bimodal stance a bit by talking about convergence as well, that, you know, ultimately we aspire to converge. And I think we should aspire to converge as fast as possible, because as long as you maintain bimodalism, whether it's product versus project or digital versus industrial, you know, agile versus waterfall, you're immediately introducing tribalism into the organization. You're immediately driving the idea that we have two teams. We got the cool new funky kids and we got the boring old farts, and you're immediately driving a big fracture down the middle of your organization. It's a really, really toxic way to work.
Yeah. Which organization do you want to belong? So if you ask the people, and of course, people want to be part of the cool guys. So yeah.
Well, you also drive entrenched positions so that other people go, hell no, that stuff's just crazy cowboy stuff. I'm staying here in the sensible, solid, proven world of you drive entrenched positions both ways, actually.
So great point. Just take a look from New Zealand to Europe and to the US and all over the world. What do you think? Is DevOps all over the world the same? Like ITIL should be the same or Scrum should be the same because there are some frameworks written down. So what do you think? Is DevOps the same all over the world?
I think, well, actually, DevOps is all over the world different. So
that's a good answer.
So one of the things we need to learn is, and this comes back to the whole product versus project thing, we don't know where it ends. Anytime we do any work in the real world, I think, outside of really strictly defined technological spaces, because technology can be really tightly locked down to be near a simple system, but any other area of the world, which is why agile thinking is exploding out into business now, we don't know where it ends. So whether it's a project or whether it's introducing DevOps ways of working or introducing agile ways of working or any change at all to build something or change the way we work, we don't know where it ends. So that means that DevOps looks different in every single organization around the world. The only thing that's common is the principles they applied in order to move forward on their journey. But the result of applying those principles to a complex system is random. It'll be different in every single instance. So you can start seeing patterns across large amounts of data to see common patterns that emerge from organizations that take these approaches. But there's certainly no one pattern that emerges and there's no one answer. Mm-hmm. And every organization's DevOps journey or any journey is unique.
Yeah, this is also what, from my point of view, makes it very interesting. It's maybe we can also ask the question a little bit differently, because I think you would agree that DevOps is also very much a movement. So as you said also in the beginning, there is no formal definition. So it's a movement. You also, I think, you travel a lot in conferences and speak. So how do you see, so which regions also in the world, so where is DevOps very much pushed or influenced? Do you see some patterns here?
I'm not sure I have a sufficiently global view to answer that well.
Yeah, you were last but week certainly, in London, isn't it? Yeah,
so there's passionate support coming in the UK and Europe. And of course, there's an epicenter of energy in the US. Mm-hmm. And New Zealand, well, certainly Wellington seems to be rocking, even by a global standard. The fact people are always surprised. My clients include the New Zealand's largest government department and New Zealand's tax collector. So, and all the major banks are on this. The national airline is on this. The telcos are on this. So, you know, all the big core horses in New Zealand are either way advanced or at least have one blue glittery leg on the horse. You know, they're all starting the journey or well down the journey. And so, you know, one of the banks has completely transformed itself. One of the government departments has completely changed the way it deploys software. So certainly it's hot here, but I don't have a good picture around the rest of the world. And I think that's an interesting question. I'm always fascinated by China. Mm-hmm. So here you have what is now one of the largest economies on earth. And it's almost completely opaque to us. We have very little visibility for what's actually going on in China in terms of ways of working. So I know some people you know, go and do training and have exchanges and work with universities in China and have a small visibility of this. And there's some academic exchange, but every time I try and research, I find it really quite opaque. And I think that's a really interesting question because, you know, China is on the cusp in the next couple of years of being one of the five most powerful countries on Earth. And will eventually, of course, be the most powerful country on Earth. And yet we have very little idea what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. So have a look on your 20-point list. Regarding point number 9, I think it's a great point. So that leads to the point, do we have product teams or do we have projects? And I think it's a good point over there. So what's the experience with automation within projects? I would say so. Within a project, you are not forced to automate the things. And within product teams who build it and who run it, they are forced and they are pushed to automate their work.
Absolutely. So what happens is that, you know, my rule of thumb is it costs about 3 times as much to automate a test as it does to execute that test manually. So if you're a project manager, you've got the option of either doing all the testing once manually at the end or investing in automation and doing it many times throughout the project. And for many old school project managers who don't get what this is all about, they go, you can't be serious. Why would I triple my testing costs? So they have, and in terms of automating continuous delivery and any other areas, they're only going to do it once. They're going to build the thing, they're going to deploy it, they're all going to run away. So, you know, why would they be interested in automating deployment? They're never going to have to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really.
So all the incentives are wrong for project managers and for people on projects. They're paid, they're incented, they're measured on how quickly and accurately they deploy once.
And maybe one interesting point would also be, so now let's say having also some insight also and seeing all the problems with the traditional faced project management and the wish of the companies also to change towards DevOps, standing teams, doing agile, you build it, you own it. But now let's talk about transformation. So people which were used to work 20 or 30 years the traditional mode, and now you want to move, and you want, I understand also you work as a consultant, you support companies in that transformation, and I think it's also a mindset change. So do you have some tips for us? How can we from your experience, what are the challenges and to actually that people change towards the new way of working?
Many thoughts on this, but some of the core ones are, I'm highly amused when I see organizations that announce that they're going to move towards agile ways of working, and they're going to do that in a big bang project because apparently they missed the agile class, you know. So we have to move towards new ways of working in an agile way, which means we should iterate, increment, experiment, explore, find our way, because again, we don't know how it lands. And I get some really interesting conversations with traditional organizational change management people who want to know what the target operating model is. And I say, well, I have no idea. And anybody who tells you they know what your operating model is going to look like in 2 years' time, you should show them the door, because they have no idea either.
Can I ask a question between here? So I'm hearing now that actually also the transformation itself, you can do it in an agile way, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's essential to move forward incrementally and experimentally to find out what works at your organization right now at this point in time. And so another language that I use is talking about navigational stars as aspirations that we sail towards. You know, in the Northern Hemisphere, you talk about the Pole Star or the North Star. Well, that doesn't work in of course, down here in New Zealand. So I talk about Matariki, which is a Maori name for the Pleiades constellation, the Subaru constellation, mm-hmm. which is a constellation they navigated with, which is highly significant to them. But I use that language of a navigational star, that the navigational star is that we do everything in product teams, and we don't have any project organizational constructs and da 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 da. But that's a star that we're sailing towards. It's not something we're going to just leap to overnight. It's the direction we should be going in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, consent. So now let's switch to another point. I like to talk about the word or the phrase bimodal IT, the IT with two speeds or different speeds. What do you think about that in the context of DevOps?
Well, I think, again, many, many thoughts, but one of the core ones, again, is that we must create white space. So around any attempts to work in new ways. So even though I'm really down on the idea of bimodal, ironically, bimodal is essential as a temporary thing while you're experimenting with new ways of working. In order to experiment with a new way of working, you have to give it isolation, white space. You need to decouple it from the rest of your system so that it can move in new ways. Otherwise, it'll still be locked into the old system. Mm-hmm. And it's a common joke amongst consultants. You probably see the same thing yourself over and over again. You go into organizations and they say, oh, we tried Agile and it doesn't work. And the moment you probe that, you discover that they told a team to be agile, but left them locked into the rest of the machine. So it was impossible for them to be agile. Mm.
And the other interesting thing I notice is a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if people say, if they are really skepticals or no-nos and say, oh, this will not work, then it actually will not work. So coming back to that, I understand. So yeah, it's the key to success. It's really, it's a journey, do an experiment step by step, and maybe bimodal is the first step to the next step. But how do you deal with, because each organization has such kind of people, so the really no-nos and or skepticals. In a negative
sense. Yeah. So I think of this in terms of the normal distribution, and there are those early adopters and pioneers at the other end of the normal distribution who are on board straight away. So I like to say, work with the people who want to be changed. You know, if people are resistant, then I used to bang away, but my strategy now is if people are resistant, I just go fine and I go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So find the people who want to be changed, work with the people who have the vision, who are the early adopters, are the pioneers, and create some proof points. Because as soon as you do something within the organization or very close to the organization that works, then you start moving down that bell curve. You start moving into the early majority, the people who just need to see it. And as soon as they see it, they go, oh, it does work. And they start getting on board. And then as soon as the early majority starts coming on board, then the late majority goes, oh, look, everybody's going over there. And they come along as well.
Yeah.
And the naysayers end up standing on their own, wondering where everybody went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that sounds pretty impressive also. What if people just change by themselves, or they want it by themselves? So you're saying, actually create some early successes, and if people see that, they want to move to that as well.
So another analogy we've used is that I just kind of run around an organization with a blowtorch trying to set the grass alight. Mm-hmm. And every now and then, we hit somewhere that is nice and dry and eager to hear new ideas, and a fire takes off. Other places, nothing happens. Well, okay, fine. Just move on and concentrate on the areas where you are getting a reception and get something going, get those proof points. And then, later on, you do have to start addressing the areas of resistance. But if you're already getting momentum and if you've already got data and evidence and proof points from within the organization, then you start going up the pole to management going, look, do you want this or don't you? We need to work together to address these other areas.
Yeah, true. So sounds really, really good. So now we're talking about, I think, half an hour about your blog article. And, sounds like a manifesto against project management and regarding the DevOps philosophy. So I think we should minimize projects and should build up product teams, the teams who deliver, who build it, who run it. What do you think about that?
I think we're all familiar with the momentum of projects that I was just talking to someone the other day about this in the context of a very large project where if you're within the or even if you're outside the organization as a consultant, if there's a whole lot of money being sunk on a big project, then if somebody is a naysayer, if they say, oh, look, this isn't going to work because you're just seen as somebody who is trying to create a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're seen as somebody who's not on board, who's actually working counter to this important project. And so you get the whole Emperor's New Clothes thing where everybody's just all smiling and nodding and saying how fantastic this project is because nobody wants to be seen to be the one who's not supportive. And so projects just get this horrendous momentum of their own. There's the sunk cost fallacy. There's the way they're divorced from customers so often, so the customers don't even realize how off the rails it's going. All these things, many different causes, but the pattern is that projects get a life of their own. I heard a wonderful story recently about a project that had been not killed off, but just shut down, sort of put on ice. And then the organization discovered months later that they were still paying a whole bunch of vendors and consultants in the context of that project. And so while they thought it was on hold, they'd actually burnt the rest of the budget for the project, which I thought was fun. So, no, exactly. And whereas, you know, the whole premise of Agile is that you're constantly reevaluating your assumptions. You're constantly reevaluating whether or not you should even do this thing. And, you know, one of the four options every time you evaluate an iteration is to completely abandon it's continue, deploy, pivot, or abandon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but now, honestly, because looking now at Agile, because Agile Manifesto, it's 2001, and also I think Scrum or other frameworks they're even older. And if I talk to developers, mm-hmm. they also say, yeah, we do that. Actually, since a while already. So why is it that now talking about the horses, why it took so long until they start adopting, so not only Agile, but now also including operations, so DevOps?
Well, actually, I don't think it took very long. I think it only took a decade or two.
Okay. Yeah, it depends on what you define long, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, if we look at the rates of how fast society can change and how fast whole industries can change, then, you know, a decade's not a long time. Mm-hmm. And even though technology is changing at a blinding pace, it drives this fallacy in thinking that individual humans and teams and organizations and industries and societies can change at the same pace. And they can't. Humans change at a remarkably slow pace. I make the joke that we have to wait for some people to die to see change. Mm-hmm.
Looking at the watch, right? Yeah. It's for me. It was very interesting. But I have no questions. More questions so far.
Thanks, Alex, for that hint. So, yes, we should come to an end for this podcast. So, thank you, Rob. Thank you, IT Skeptic, for having you here on our podcast. Really, the first one in English, and I hope it's not going to be the last one. And I think thank you for your remarkable ideas. Thank you for your blog posting and all the things you mentioned to help us to build a better IT, to make IT faster and reliable, more reliable. So thank you to have you.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun. I'm happy to have been part of it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks also from my side. It was really a pleasure talking to you.